The College of Medical Evangelists. This health is tied to, good health is tied to the salvation of our souls. And how each one of us, it is important for each one of us to obey the laws of health. And if we do not obey those laws, then there are consequences. And also, I think, I know that he went over some of our past history in terms of Dr. Kellogg and the institution that he helped to start up in Battle Creek and some of the challenges that came from that institution. And it was during this period when they were having a lot of challenges, a lot of problems with Dr. Kellogg and the sanitarium in Battle Creek, when God started to, God decided to move on from that place and build a different system of teaching. Just to point out some things in the news, I don't know how many of you read the USA News and World Report. In that was 10 health habits that will help you live to 100. And number two was floss daily. That was one that will help you to live till 100. If you floss daily, you reduce the bio burden in your body, and as a result, it can help you live longer. Number eight was equally important, and it said, live like a Seventh-day Adventist. And yes, it did. And this is what they wrote. Americans who define themselves as Seventh-day Adventists have an average life expectancy of 89, about a decade longer than the average American. One of the basic tenets of the religion is that it's important to cherish the body as that's on loan from God, which means no smoking, alcohol abuse, or overindulging in sweets. Followers typically stick to a vegetarian diet based on fruits, vegetables, beans, and nuts, and get plenty of exercise. They're also very focused on family and community. So this is what they said about Seventh Adventists. And so number eight on the list of 10 habits that will help you live to 100 was live like a Seventh-day Adventist. So Seventh-day Adventists in the last 150 years have made a mark on the world. And we will be talking about that mark and how that came to be. And this mark has been in the area of healthcare and medical evangelism. There's a basic premise that says individuals cannot arrive at their destination unless they know where they're going. And it is a simple statement, but it's a very profound one at the same time. You will never know if you've arrived if you don't know what your destination is. So you'll be constantly searching. And so when CME was created, it was created with a certain vision of what needed to be accomplished through this institution. And the model that CME was built upon was a model that was to be replicated elsewhere. But very specifically, the model that was to be followed was to be done here at CME. Mrs. White had a vision, and in that vision she saw a certain place, and she saw it very vividly. So vividly that even though the church went and bought two other sanitariums, Glendale and Paradise Valley, at very low cost and were able to make those function, she went to those places and they realized that this wasn't the place that she had found. And in that vision, she had five specific things that they were supposed to look for to help them guide them to the spot. Because after all, Mrs. White saw it in vision, but the Lord did not give the exact location. He gave certain specifics of that location. And so, since only she saw it, it was hard for her to, she tried as best to translate it to what she saw to the other people. And so these were the five conditions. The property, number one, the property would be secured for much less than the original cost. Number two, money would come from unexpected sources. Number three, this has to do more with the location and the property. The property would be unoccupied. Number four, the location would be somewhere in Southern California. And number five, the property had a tent-like canopy of trees. So this was the five conditions of this vision. And so every place they went to, they looked for unoccupied buildings. They looked for property that would be secured for much less than the original cost. And most importantly, they looked for that physical representation, which was the canopy of trees. And unfortunately, the place, Paradise Valley and Glendale, did not have this canopy of trees that Mrs. White talked about. And so they still were looking. That's a very simple reason why they were still looking for another location, having found two other very good places to build and to develop sanitariums. There was another problem with this request from God, and that was that the conference had no money. The General Conference had already gone into debt to buy these other two sanitariums, even though they had bought them at much less of the cost. For example, Glendale was originally priced at $55,000. And just remember, $55,000 in the 1800s or early 1900s is a lot of money. And so $55,000 was what the original price was. The church eventually bought it for $12,000. So that was a steal. Glendale was also somewhat similar to that. But the General Conference was feeling a pinch in terms of cash. And they had told the California Conference that they should adopt a no-debt policy. And the General Conference was trying to adopt a no-debt policy as well, which means that they would, if they were going to make any acquisitions, they would buy it straight cash. And they would not go into debt. It's a good policy to have. And so they, looking at the picture that these leaders had of where the church was going, they decided that they were going to have a no-debt policy. And they communicated that to the conference in California. So with these two sanitariums in debt, how could they pick up another sanitarium and go further into debt with this no-debt policy? But in 1904, Mrs. White indicated that the property would be around the cities of Riverside, San Bernardino, and Redlands. So a little more specifics. Southern California is a large place, but she said that it would be around these three cities. So now Pastor John Burton had a reason to look for, a place to look for, and he was in this area. By the way, the building, Burton Hall, is named in his honor. And there was a place that he saw, that he had seen a few years earlier in 1901, and that was Loma Linda Association. And this was in Loma Linda, right outside of the Redlands. It was a busy place. It wasn't unoccupied. It was occupied. It was occupied by 40 businessmen and 80 physicians that were in the process of building a very large healthcare resort. And they had very good plans. They had good capital, and they were putting together a wonderful plan for making this place into a healthcare resort. And unfortunately for them, in 1905, this physician business group failed. And they were selling the property for $155,000. And that's when, in today's money, that's worth $3.1 million. But that is when John Burton, having known the specifics of the location in terms of, you know, being between Riverside, San Bernardino, and Redlands, he suddenly began to zero in on this property. And he reported to Mrs. White that he had found the property that met all the conditions of the vision, and most importantly, it had that canopy of trees. And so, this canopy like trees. And so, they began to look more closely at that. God's timing is impeccable. In 1901, it was occupied, but by 1905, it was unoccupied. And not only that, but the price fell from $155,000 to $85,000. And so now Loma Linda was coming within the ballpark of the church. But when you don't have any money, if you're broke, $85,000 is, well, $85,000, you know? And you're not going to be able to raise that. If you don't have the money, you just don't have it. And the conference had their no debt policy. And some of the church members questioned why they should invest in sanitariums. After all, in the earlier days of their history of the church, they would get together when someone was sick and they would pray, sometimes all night. And that person would be healed. The Lord would heal that person. Miracles happen. And so they were saying, why should we depend on sanitariums? We should go and just lay hands on the sick and heal them, just like the apostles did. We should have faith like them. But Mrs. White gave a more historical perspective on exactly what was needed. She said, in the early history of our work, many were healed by prayer. Some, after they were healed, pursued the same course in the indulgence of appetite that they had followed in the past. They do not live and work in such a way as to avoid sickness. They do not appreciate the Lord's goodness to them. Again and again, they were brought to suffering through their own careless thoughts, a careless, thoughtless course of action. How could the Lord be glorified in bestowing on them the gift of healing? So this is why she said that there was a need for sanitarium work. And then she went on to say, when the light came that we should have a sanitarium, the reason was plainly given. There were many who needed to be educated in regard to healthful living. A place must be provided to which the sick could be taken, where they could be taught how to live as to preserve health. So that is the reason why God wanted the church to invest in sanitariums and to work through sanitariums to teach the sick how to stay healthy. Not only to heal them, but also to teach them how not to get back into that same trap again, how not to fall again into that same hole. And so this was the reason why God asked the church to invest in sanitarium work and to help spread the health message. The Loma Linda Association dropped the price further to $45,000. So it sounds familiar, like what we're having today with the real estate crisis, where the prices are just going down a lot. And when it dropped to $45,000, Pastor John Burton again contacted Mrs. White and reported the drop in price. And he also told her that if we do not secure it now, there are other buyers who will take it. And so at that point, Mrs. White asked him to take a closer look at the place. And so he did, and he found that it was well stocked with almost $12,000 worth of unused supplies. And, of course, the trees were there. And the absolute lowest price, he asked the owners of the place, of the property, the absolute lowest price that they would go was $40,000. That was more than three times the cost of Glendale. And this was their absolute rock bottom, going out of sale price. And that night, Mrs. White had a vision from God confirming that this was the place and they should move on it. And so she wrote a letter, and I have a copy of it thanks to the local Ellen White estate staff. It says, "Your letter has just been read. I had no sooner finished reading it than I said, I will consult no one, for I have no question at all about the matter. I advised Willie," which is her son, "to send your telegram without spending time to ask the advice of the brethren. Secure the property by all means so that it can be held, and then obtain all the money you can and make sufficient payments to hold the place. This is the very property we should have. Do not delay, for it is just what is needed. As soon as it is secured, a working force can begin operations in it. I think that sufficient help can be secured to carry this matter through. I want you to be sure to lose no time in securing the right to purchase the property. We will do our utmost to help you raise the money. I know that Redlands and Riverside are to be worked, and I pray that the Lord may be gracious and not allow anyone else to get this property instead of us." So that is what she wrote to him, and a shorter version of that was sent in a telegram as fast as possible to John Burton so that he could start to get the property. But here's a problem. The church had a policy, had a no debt policy. And the prophet of God is saying, buy it. And so what does a man do? He cannot go against the church because the church has authority. And at the same time, God is telling him through Mrs. White to buy the place. And so he decided to do something that was a little different from what, I don't know if many people realize this today, but he decided that he would not commit church funds to the property. Instead, what he would do is he would take a personal loan on his own name and he would put the money down. So that way, if anything happened, it would be his money that was lost and not the church's money. And so what he did is he went and he took a personal loan on his name for $1,000. And he went to the owners and he put a down payment to show that he was interested in the property. In faith, he put that down payment of $1,000 on his name to that property. That was the payment he made for CME. And he had absolutely no clue how the money would come in. They needed $40,000. And they set up a payment plan of increments of $5,000 every 2 weeks for a while and then ultimately paying it so that they would pay it. And if they did not pay the payment on time, the owners reserved the right to sell the property to someone else. So if you had invested $5,000 and you made another $5,000 payment and then you defaulted on the third one, it would go to someone else and you wouldn't get your money back. So he would lose $11,000. That's what would happen. And so he put the $1,000 down and he contacted several people in this area for the need for more money. There was a farmer that lived around Redlands, and they arrived at his house in the evening. They went there earlier, he wasn't there. They arrived at his house in the evening and he was there. He was eating breakfast with his wife and child. And they read to him some of the testimonies on the health message and things like that. And they also read to him some of the letters that Mrs. White had sent, including the telegram that she had sent saying, buy this place. And then Elder Burden said, look, I have put money down on my own name for $1,000. And he said, you know, I do have some money and I was thinking about reinvesting it in my own personal business. And he said, I have decided that, the Lord is in this and I will give you the money. And it was $2,400. And this Elder Burden said, you know, brother, we don't have any receipt for you. Because when you take money from someone for the church, what do you give them? A receipt. But this wasn't for the church, right? And whether he did not have a receipt on hand or whether he just did not have one from the church, he said it to him and the man said, just don't worry about it. I know that the Lord is in it. Here's the money. And he pledged the money or gave the money to them. And over a series of miracles, money arrived just in time to pay for the property when it was needed. One time, a check was mailed to Pastor Burden, and it appeared just 4 hours before, a check for $5,000 appeared just 4 hours before the deadline came to pay that $5,000 payment. And if you remember, if you think about it, snail mail even today is slow, but in those days it was slower. So the money had been sent long before it had been asked for. And it had been sent from Atlantic City, New Jersey. And the money came across the United States to California. And it arrived just 4 hours before they needed the money to put the down payment. So in every step of the way, God was showing them that it was He who asked that this property be bought. And He was providing the money as needed to pay for it. And the money that came, this $5,000 check, was mailed by a lady. And to this day, we do not know her name. And she sent the money for $5,000. And it was one of the payments that they used. Eventually, they paid off the institution, the money for the place. And they didn't pay it off in 10, 20, 30 years. They paid it off in just under 6 months. They raised the money entirely through membership. And with discounts, because they paid early, with discounts, the total price came to $38,900 that was paid down on this property. So Loma Linda was bought for $38,900 and it was paid in less than 6 months. So the conditions of the vision were fulfilled. If you remember, the conditions were that the property would be secured at much less than the original cost. $155,000, it came down to $38,900. Money would come from unexpected sources. The property would be unoccupied. They found the property unoccupied, the building standing, and in the buildings were $12,000 worth of healthcare supplies for them because these doctors had been planning to build a healthcare resort. And it was in Southern California, and it had a tent-like canopy of trees. And so that was all the conditions, among some others as well, were fulfilled in buying this property. When Mrs. White got off the train in Redlands and drove into Loma Linda, and when I say drove, she came on some wagon or something like that. She remarked to Willie, and she said, "Willie, I have been here before." And Willie gently told her mother, "You haven't." But then everybody realized that she had been here before in vision. And she had seen it so vividly that she knew every place. And she knew the place like she had been there all her life. She went into all the rooms, she inspected everything, and she kept remarking to people that she had been here before. It was just like she had seen in the vision. And this was the first time that she had stepped foot on the property. She had not seen it before. And so another condition was fulfilled, and that was that what the prophet saw was exactly what was bought. Along with the school of nursing, Mrs. White indicated from God that a school for physicians should be made as well. And Mrs. White had warned against the dangers of attending schools of medicine that where students would be brought into the companionship of skeptics, infidels, and the profligate. I think that's how you pronounce it. Profligate, thank you. She had lamented that only a few came through the systems of the world, like Joseph and Daniel, uncorrupted, firm as a rock, and strong on principle. She emphasized the difference between the Christian physician and that of other physicians, and this bears our attention. She says that the work of the Christian physician does not end with healing the maladies of the body. His efforts should extend to the diseases of the mind, to the saving of the soul. The physician should know how to pray. She talked about the medical cases, about taking medical cases to the great physician in humble trust. She says that he should be able to point his patients to Christ and teach them to carry all their cares and perplexities to the great burden bearer. So these are some of the conditions of a Christian Adventist physician and what exactly their work would encompass. It was more than just healing the maladies of the body. It was saving their soul. They were to work with gospel ministers in saving the soul of the patient. Elder John Burden, after a few years of CME been created, he compiled together a book in which he recounted some of his experiences in starting CME. And he wrote in Chapter 4 of College of Medical Evangelists, an educational center, and he talks about some of the conditions, some of the principles behind forming this institution. Remember, if you don't know your destination, you will never know if you've arrived. And so he quotes different passages that Mrs. White had written, and this is just different quotations of different passages of what she had written in terms of what CME should be. She said, "The medical school at Loma Linda is to be of the highest order because those that are in the school have the privilege of maintaining a living connection with the wisest of all physicians, from whom there is communicated knowledge of a superior order, and for the special preparation of those of our youth who have clear convictions of their duty to obtain a medical education that will enable them to pass examinations required by law of all who practice as regularly qualified physicians. We are to supply whatever may be required, so that these youth need not be compelled to go to medical schools conducted by men not of our faith. Thus, we shall close a door that the enemy would be pleased to have left open, and our young men and young women, whose spiritual interests the Lord desires us to safeguard, will not feel compelled to connect with unbelievers in order to obtain a thorough training along medical lines. So this was the reason why CME was created, and a medical school for physicians was created. She goes on to talk about the classes of workers that should be trained. It is for the training of such workers as well as the training of physicians that the School of Loma Linda has been founded. In this school, many workers are to be qualified with the ability of physicians to labor not in professional lines as physicians, but as medical evangelists. The whole point of being a physician, being trained at the CME, is not so that you can go and get rich, although you may. The reason is to work as medical evangelists. This training is to be in harmony with the principles underlying true higher education. The cause is in need of hundreds of workers who have received a practical and thorough education in medical lines and who are prepared to labor house to house as teachers, Bible workers, and call porters. Such students should come out of the school without having sacrificed the principles of health reform or their love to God for God and righteousness. And she goes on to say that the Bible should be the perfect standard of truth, and the Bible should be central to the training of our physicians. She goes on to say that our students should have the individuality and the power to think and to do. They should have independent thought. They should do individual research. Instead of confining their study to what men have said or written, let students be directed to the sources of truth, to vast fields open for research in nature and revelation. Let them contemplate the great facts of duty and destiny, and the mind will expand and strengthen. Instead of educating weaklings, institutions of learning may send forth men to be strong and to act, men who are masters and not slaves of circumstances, men who possess the breadth of mind, the clearness of thought, and the courage of their convictions. So these were some of the things that she wanted in general for the students that went through our educational institutions as well as CME to be. That was the standard that she had for the students. I just want to read for your benefit some of the lives of the students that graduated from CME. The first 100 students that graduated from this place went on to do many great things. They fulfilled exactly what God had envisioned for them. One of these, one of these people was Adrian Clark. He graduated in 1921. He served an internship at LA County Hospital and then embarked for India. He was saying in early 1926, Clark was seeing 18 patients an hour, and he was sweating over language study in India. And he reported that he was cutting 24 years off 12 Tamil girls. Actually, he was cutting off the redundant earlobes, which had been expanded by huge earrings, and the girls were happy at the result. So he was doing some small-time surgery. There's another guy. His name was David D. Coffin. He graduated in 1920, and he went to Nanjing in China. And he hurried out of China in 1927, out of that city, because of wars. But the next year, they were back, and they saw 8,000 patients. In 1930, he reported that fighting goes on every day, more fiercely every night. Every night, about 30 people sleep in our house and go down in the cellar where when the fighting is worst. Plenty of bullets strike the upper part of the house, but we don't worry about that. The enemy treats us well. They shoot from both sides and around our corners. Our courage is good. We trust the Lord to care for us. So even in the most difficult of circumstances, graduates from CME were serving in China and in India and other parts of the world. There was another person that did not go to CME, but he embodied the principles of CME, and that was Harry Miller. He went to China, and if you remember, he's known as a China doctor. He went to China. He pioneered the use of soy materials, from which we get soy milk and things like that today. And he served with distinction over there for many years, operating on some of the greatest generals and leaders of China. He had access to the highest and the lowest in China, and he served many, many years over there as a physician. Charles Harrison came to Loma Linda from his native Indiana, and he enrolled in the School of Nursing in 1909. After finishing nursing, he went into medicine and graduated in 1915. Harrison passes British boards in unusual fashion, because in those days, passing the British boards for licensing, 60 to 70% failed first time, but he passed the very first time he took it. And that was true of many of the physicians that studied at CME, whether they went to Canada or whether they went to Australia or other places in the British Empire. They were able to take very difficult tests and were able to pass them with distinction. And it just showed how well they had been taught at the College of Medical Evangelists. So as you can see, there are many other... there is one other story that I wanted to show you, one other person. Arthur H. Kretschmar. He graduated in 1920, and he volunteered for overseas service. And the very first place he went to was in Africa. Now it's known as Botswana. And the local government refused to let him heal at first. But then he began to work over there, and slowly they allowed him to heal, but he wasn't allowed to preach. And so what he did was he continued to heal people and gain an access to their hearts. But then another missionary, W.H. Anderson, came and preached evangelistic meetings over there and was able to convert many people to the Adventist faith. And so here's an example of Adventist physicians working with gospel ministers to save people for the kingdom. In closing, I would like to say that there were some things that happened at the College of Medical Evangelists that sometimes makes people wonder whether we did the right thing. There was a question of exactly how, where Mrs. White talks about, she says that we are to supply whatever may be required to help them pass whatever examinations that are needed, and so that they can work as qualified physicians and so forth. So the question was, whatever may be supplied, how far do we go in order to help these students be effective as medical evangelists? And some people believe that it involved getting a Class A rating, accreditation from the American Association, American Medical Association, AMA. And at the time, the school had a Class C certification. And it was difficult for some of their medical graduates to gain acceptance in some places. But eventually, most of them did. They graduated from here, and then they begged and asked the boards, wherever they were at, to allow them to take the test. And when they did, they passed the test better than some who had taken their lessons or their training elsewhere. So there was this question, but they decided to go ahead and they decided to pursue that Class A rating, and they got it after a few years. And it had some ripple effects on the other colleges that were starting up. Andrews University, which was at first Emmanuel Missionary College, and Union College, and other places, also had to pursue better education standards in order to meet Loma Linda standards so that their students could be accepted. So it was like a ripple effect. But at the same time, I want to stress something here. And that is that education is a team effort. It starts with the home and the church and the school. Sometimes we expect our kids, we do not train our kids the way they should go. And then when they are old and they leave our house to go to a school, we expect the teachers to reform them, to train them the way we did not. Our preachers sometimes preach messages that do not convict, the soul. And as a result, our members are weak in the faith. And then when those members grow children and train the children the way they've been instructed, then we have weak members and we have weak children, we have weak students. And so it's impossible for teachers to undo 18 to 20 years of bad habits in just 4 years. You understand what I'm talking about? So it is a team effort to create a good, balanced Adventist physician or healthcare worker or medical evangelist. Is Loma Linda University perfect? No. In the light of what we may have read about the way students should be selected and the question and how they should be. Some may question the wisdom of accepting students who are not of our faith, let alone having teachers who do not believe as we do. The university leadership is always looking for well-qualified Adventist professors and physicians to teach at this university. Did the struggle for full accreditation with CME bring some struggles? Yeah, it did. But at the same time, we still today have a school that is by and large safe, a safe place where students can gain an education free from outside influences. Even the Mormon Church recognizes this fact, and they recommend that their students attend the schools of dentistry and medicine over here because of the standards that we uphold today. Our students go on mission trips and deferred mission. Appointees are just as committed to serve God as they were in the days of CME. One such person, Norman McNulty, is finishing up his fellowship in neurology, and he, after he finishes up in June, he will be serving God in the mission field as a deferred mission appointee. Avon Hope itself, Avon Hope Sabbath School, has sponsored many mission trips, including a few to Bangladesh, where we have practiced medicine and dentistry to thousands of people and been able to witness to them. I'm convinced that the Lord did raise up this institution for a purpose, and it was He who directed the purchase, and it was He who provided the funds for this place. And that there are many godly men and women who work in this place. I have been in contact with some of the highest levels of leadership in this institution, and I'm convinced that each one of them is consecrated, and they really want to do what God would have them to do. And in closing, I'd like to say that the responsibility of becoming a well-trained, God-fearing Seventh-day Adventist physician rests on the Adventist student at our university. If you will be consecrated to God and study hard, God will bless you as you become a medical evangelist. And may God bless the medical missionary work and the students that study at Loma Linda University as they become medical evangelists in the fullest sense of the word, and help spread help the gospel ministers finish the work so that we all can go home. Let us pray. Dear Father, we thank you for providing for CME to come into existence. And we ask today, as we study and work at Loma Linda University, that each one of us fulfill the vision that you had for this place. May we be medical evangelists working with gospel ministers hand in hand to finish the work. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.